This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You are about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL. Up next, Peter McCullough is joined by Dr. Barry Borlaug, Associate Professor of Medicine at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. They cover the nuts and bolts of pulmonary hypertension in left heart disease.
Barry, welcome to AXL.
Thanks, Peter.
This is a broad topic, and we had agreed ahead of time to draw the scope around this topic of left heart disease to heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. So set the stage here with respect to what we know about the epidemiology of pulmonary hypertension in the setting of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction.
Well, it's actually extraordinarily common. So pulmonary hypertension agnostically is really just defined by a mean PA pressure above 25. And it can be high because the left atrial pressure is high. It can be high because the pulmonary vascular resistance is high, or rarely because the cardiac output is high, and like, for example, high output failure. People with HFpEF, about in community-based studies, about 80% of them have pulmonary hypertension, at least as estimated by echo. A recent meta-analysis that was just published looking at all different studies, a lot of patients with earlier stage disease reported a somewhat lower prevalence, more like 70%, but it's very, very common.
And what are the associated factors clinically?
It seems to be associated with people that have more prolonged and severe heart failure. It's really often an indicator of high left heart filling pressures, but with more protracted heart failure severity and probably more comorbidities, people start to get, we think, remodeling of the pulmonary vasculature and more vasoconstriction. So then, in addition to high left atrial pressure, they start having an increase in pulmonary vascular resistance and a reduction in PA compliance, and that's when the right heart really starts to fail.
Is it related to the American Society of Echocardiography grade of diastolic dysfunction on the Doppler?
It has been related to that in systolic heart failure, HFrEF, not as much for HFpEF, but we see it very commonly, probably around 80%. I think that any indicator of higher filling pressures would probably be related or correlated with higher PA pressures.
So in your view, is it the pulmonary hypertension that causes the right ventricle to fail, or does the right ventricle fail from the same mysterious mechanisms that are affecting the left ventricle?
That's a great question, and that's really kind of where we're at right now, a very topical question. I think by far the biggest culprit is pulmonary hypertension, just pressure overload. Our group has shown that the RV is ill-suited to pump against high pressure. There's a steeper drop-off in RV ejection as PA pressure rises, but that's even worse. It's even more exaggerated in people with HFpEF. So they're very vulnerable to the negative effects of high PA pressures, and that's a huge problem.
Now, how about patients who do not have heart failure as a syndrome, but they develop exercise-related pulmonary hypertension? They have normal left ventricular systolic ejection fraction. Is that a precursor to development of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction?
Yes, definitely. In fact, we consider that to be early heart failure with preserved EF. These patients, and they're a very common group, they're clinically euvolemic for reasons that are not totally clear. Maybe their kidney function is still better, so they're not holding on to fluid and sodium as much. But as soon as they start doing a little exercise, even 20 watts, which is like sweeping the floor or something like that, you can see that their both their PA pressures and their left atrial pressure goes sky high, and they get very short of breath. very, very challenging group to treat because obviously you can't give them a diuretic because they have normal filling pressures at rest. You'll run into azotemia and issues like that. So very challenging, very difficult to treat. We've recently shown that in these people, we used to think that pulmonary hypertension and right ventricular dysfunction was only in the advanced stages. But even in these early stages, even when pulmonary vascular resistance and compliance are normal at rest, with the stress of exercise, we see in these types of patients that there are abnormalities in pulmonary vasodilation, and that's associated with impairments in RV reserve. So it probably is occurring earlier, and even when there's not severe PH, so that would support the latter idea that maybe it's partially related to some of these shared insults, systemic inflammation, diabetes, obesity, etc.
How about diagnostically? Should clinicians be looking at exercise echo and estimating the PA pressures? In your view, is that kind of a useful thing to be looking to?
I think it's a useful screen, provided you can get good high-quality echo imaging. We actually just published a paper earlier this year on this, and we see that when we get high-quality data, there's a pretty good correlation between the transtricuspid gradient, so the TR velocity, but we could only get that about half the time, even in a highly controlled research setting. So that's a concern. Remember, the other problem here is you estimate the PA systolic pressure based on the tricuspid regurgitation velocity, but also the right atrial pressure. And the problem is there's not a good way to estimate the right atrial pressure during exercise. You can't just assume it's 10 or 5 in everybody, because sometimes it's 2 and sometimes it's 45. So it's really all over the map with that. So you can certainly get a signal if you can get a good high-quality Doppler signal, and that can spur you on to proceed with more aggressive workup. But I think if you don't get good imaging, you're still going to be left with an invasive, you know, a stronger, more gold standard test.
And I think we're still grappling about how to size up right ventricular systolic performance and its influence on the velocity of the TR jet. Should these patients have a right heart cath?
I think that in many cases, yes. If HFpEF is the question, and I think that you can make that clinical diagnosis of heart failure and they have a normal EF, you don't need a cath. But a lot of these people, it's still their intermediate pretest probability, and we use a Bayesian approach. And if we can't tell, that's when we do take them to the gold standard test in the cath lab. If the hemodynamics aren't normal at rest, then they should undergo exercise stress, because we know very clearly now that many patients only develop the hemodynamic perturbations during the stress of exercise. And that's, of course, when they're symptomatic too. We do quite a few of these in our practice now.
Right now, clinicians are frustrated with HFpEF. The guidance is control blood pressure, control blood volume, be judicious. In a patient where we've now diagnosed really significant pulmonary hypertension, so a mean pulmonary artery pressure that's far in excess of 25, the patient has dyspnea. What type of treatment, general pearls, can you give the audience?
Clearly, what needs to be done is if they are congested and have high filling pressures, they should be on a diuretic. And for years, people said, well, there's no evidence for diuretics, which is kind of silly. It's like saying there's no evidence for parachutes. But we now do have some evidence from the CHAMPION trial. There was an ancillary analysis, even in HFpEF patients. Patients were guided, had PA pressure guided therapy. So as their PA pressure went up, they got more diuretics, and there was a very substantial reduction in hospitalizations. We also know that increases in lung water are directly associated with increases in pulmonary vascular resistance, reduced compliance. So there's a reason to improve the PA pressure both directly by reducing LA pressure and also by potentially improving pulmonary vascular function. So diuretics to euvolemia. Beyond that, we don't have any good evidence that the pulmonary vasodilators should be used. So we can't really support that right now. It's an area of active research, and there's a lot of enthusiasm, but we don't know.
But to be clear, PDE5 inhibitors, endothelin receptor antagonists, prostanoids, none of them work.
There was one single center study in Italy of testing sildenafil for a year where they saw very impressive improvements in pulmonary vascular hemodynamics and improvements in gas exchange. That finding was not reproduced in the much larger multi-center RELAX trial. It might be related to the patients. The patients in the Italian study had very severe pulmonary vascular disease and RV dysfunction, whereas the RELAX patients were more typical of what we see in the community. A subsequent study from Europe also showed no benefit. Endothelin, even less signal of benefit, and the others are really just investigational right now.
And then how about calcium channel blockers or nitrates?
nitrates, there was hope by improving nitric oxide signaling that that would help. The NEAT trial was not specifically in PH with HFpEF, but it was a HFpEF trial, showed a trend for a reduction in activity levels with that. So we're actually taking people off the nitrates based on those results. Calcium channel blockers, no real good evidence, unlike some responders in PAH, that we'd see a benefit in HFpEF-associated PH with that.
Well, we certainly covered a challenging topic in this interview, Barry. Do you have any final words from the audience in this area?
Well, I think we really need to stay vigilant and stay on these patients and identify them. People are, in my practice, coming in frequently, and they're often false reassured that they don't have heart failure, they don't have HFpEF, they don't have PH, when in fact they do. It needs a high index of suspicion, and when we find it, diurese, and think about enrolling them in a clinical trial, because that's the only way we're going to really make progress in this devastating and increasingly common disease.
Well, let that be the last word, and Barry, thank you for joining us on Excel.
Thank you, Peter.
This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.